welcome to the Revenue Hub podcast. I'm Trevor Grant. Through these podcasts, we aim to discuss topics relevant to professionals within the hotel, travel and leisure sectors. Whether you're in a revenue management function, reservations, front office operations, digital marketing or sales, we hope the topics discussed will be of interest and either answer some questions or maybe prompt some more.
Hi, welcome to the Revenue Hub podcast. We're joined today by two guests. We have Jens from Pace and we have Pontus from Berner and Becker. So I will let them introduce themselves. Jens, welcome. Can you tell us a bit about yourself?
Thank you very much, Trevor. My name is Jens Monk. I am the CEO and founder of a company called Pace, which does revenue management based in London.
Superb. Thank you. And Pontus, can you just give us a quick intro?
Yes. Hello, everyone. Good to be back. I guess it's the fourth podcast going on. Co-founder of Berner Becker Revenue Management. Looking forward to today's podcast.
Excellent. Thanks, guys. Welcome on board. Thanks for having giving up the time to join us. So again, we're going to really, you guys are going to do, as Pontus will know from the work that we do, you guys do a lot of the work. I sit here and kind of fire the old question and probe. So today we're really looking at what RM capabilities does a hotel need today? So let's kick off with just that as a broad question. So who wants to take this? Jens, Pontus, who wants to jump in?
Yeah, happy to jump in. So I think the RM capabilities is a broad topic, and it's something that's increasingly being raised on a strategic level within hospitality companies. And I think we have, broadly speaking, a couple of different categories. So you have the people on the one hand. So what are the requirements in terms of the people that you need to have internally or externally supporting you in the work that you're trying to do? And then you have the second category, obviously, which is the strategy and process. So what is the goal of what you're trying to achieve, and what are the processes supporting the people trying to get there? And then thirdly, you have the tools internally, whatever that may be in terms of assisting the people in getting to where they want to get to.
Yeah. So I mean, if I was just jumping in there, so if I'm a GM, let's say I've just acquired, or I'm a new owner, I've just acquired a new property, say a boutique property, say in Munich, as that's where you're based, Pontus.
Yeah.
Is this a chicken and egg scenario? You know, which comes first? Do I have the person? Do I have the technology? Is there, Pontus, from your point of view, from a consultant's perspective, how would you look at that?
Yeah. No, I think one of the initiatives to actually do this podcast together with us three in this constellation, which I think we should clarify to the listeners, it's really cool actually, but the status quo is that when a hotelier nowadays wants to do professional revenue management, they're a little bit confused. Like, do I need tech? Do I need a revenue manager? Do I hire someone internally? Do I outsource it? There's quite a lot of options out there. And I would say hoteliers nowadays are fairly confused of what they should do, actually. And if you walk into this tech hall on ITB, you will be overwhelmed with the amount of systems that call themselves revenue management systems, although there are maybe only a handful that actually do something really good. But so in short, the answer, I would say, is a mix of both technology and human brain power. But it is an evolving thing, and it is different now than it was 10 years ago, and it will be different 10 years from now than what it is today. But I think it depends in the end also, if you look at today, what type of hotel are you and what are your needs? And in the end, well, you can even drill it down to like, what is revenue management? For people that say, okay, pricing of my ballrooms is revenue management, then a tech will be a super good option for you. It's always a good option. But there are a lot more to revenue management, to strategic decision making, et cetera, that you need to sort of complement with a bit of strategic making and human brain power. So that's, I guess, a starting and standpoint from my side on the topic.
that sort of touches into what Jens was saying there about having the people, the strategic, and the technology piece.
Exactly.
Do you see it as a chicken and egg scenario, Jens, or are you coming from a RM technology? Is it, you know, technology first because you could have someone within your operation that could develop and do and utilize that technology?
Well, we're all by nature biased in terms of how we, and I don't mean that only in terms of our own preferences, but also in terms of our thinking is shaped by the environment in which we operate. And we, being a technology company, obviously deal and interact more with companies who need technology and who are in that frame. But stepping out of that for a second, we really need to start with what is the strategy? What are we trying to achieve? What type of operation are we running? And where are we trying to go? So you could have actually, this is interesting. I was in Berlin just yesterday, came back yesterday evening, talking to a hotel operation. They're actually hybrid. So they have apartment hotels and hostels. And the guy there was saying, well, now we all have children and we're a bit older, so we think making money is also part of what we're doing. But when we started this 15, 20 years ago, we were very radical, typical Berliners, anti-capitalists. So we were as far away from thinking about revenue as something we wanted to achieve as possible. We just wanted to provide an amazing, unusual experience. Mm-hmm. That's just by way of saying that what you need has to kind of be dictated by, first of all, a conversation of what are we doing with this? Maybe we're not even wanting to make money at all. Maybe it's more of a kind of cultural creation or something else.
Yeah. And that capitalism comes with age.
That's another interesting, exactly. Comes with age and children.
Yeah, exactly.
So if we see, so let's say, so it's a mix, as we've already touched on, between the human element, the strategy, and the technology. Let's say we've laid out a strategy. We recognize that we then need to get some technology. What technology should we have? I mean, you hear all the time, we read all the time about technology stack. I mean, we've touched on this previously with regards to, and I think you described it as descriptive technology and prescriptive technology. But what do we actually need to start moving this forward?
Can I? I'll start on that ball a little bit. Looking back 10 years ago, when you didn't have much technology, where you needed to go into each and every extranet of an OTA to change your price manually, and when you needed to basically Google around for 2 hours to set together a price scheme to see what your competitors were charging for the within a month. Those days are long gone, and thankfully for that. And this is, I guess, what we would call then the descriptive tech that can sort of business intelligence tool that will allow a revenue manager or a hotel to do better decision making and much quicker. And but then the prescriptive tech, and that's your area of expertise, Jens. But that's basically giving decision power also over to the technology to do things that technology does much better and much more efficient than a human. And I think a mix of the two is definitely what's needed today. But Jens, you can shed more light on the prescriptive tech and that whole part.
No, that makes complete sense. And I agree with what you're saying. I think if we assume that we have a kind of typical independent today. So you mentioned, Trevor, if you take the role of a kind of small independent property, what you're probably trying to achieve, assuming now that you've moved away from your youthful folly of trying to fight the system, you're trying to probably have great customer experience. You're probably also trying to increase your revenues, and you're trying to create loyalty to your brand. All of these things, that forms your strategy.
Absolutely.
Now you want to work out, do I have people either inside my operation or advisors or people I pay for services who I can trust who will help me work out what do I need for that to be in place? Where should I distribute, etc.? So let's also assume that that you have some of those pieces. You know where you're distributing. You have a strategy around how you're achieving some of these things. Then what you need are a combination of tools to make sure that that actually happens. And where we come in specifically, Pace, is we think that there are some, this is not actually something we think, it's generally recognized that there are many things that the human mind is great at, but statistical calculation and hard computations are not the things that we are great at. So that's where analytical tools come in. There's a reason we all love calculators and computers, is because they do some of the things that are super hard. Mm-hmm. And the reason why on Wall Street they don't do all of their options trading with pen and paper. So that's where we come in, and we effectively give whoever is doing the revenue management in a hotel, we give them tools to automate all of that very difficult statistical calculation of, now I've had 3 bookings come in for August 20th. Does that mean anything? They've come in over the last 2-3 hours. Does that mean anything? How is pickup evolving? What does that mean for my pricing strategy, et cetera, et cetera? There's a ton of complexity there. And that's where we think, almost at every level of complexity, if you're doing dynamic pricing, you do need those analytical tools, because Excel is not a great place to be messing around with that type of complexity.
Yeah. I agree. I made a small little calculation on the side that we also show people when we train them in our revenue management courses, when they ask, like, so what does the RMS bring us? And just a simple example, because it's all about an RMS system can obviously do this computing of the pricing and the statistical calculation and the forecasting to a much higher frequency than a RM can. And let's say if a revenue manager is stuck in a meeting for 2 hours, who does then, in that sense, take care of pricing? So if you imagine if you have a, let's say, 400 or 500 room hotel, and the system realizes that now I can do a price change of 20 euro up, and that price change would have been realized by RM as well, but let's say a bit too late, so that they would have missed out the opportunity of, let's say, 20 rooms on that price difference. Yeah. So if you take that 20 euros times 20 rooms, that's 400 euros in a day. And let's say if you have 200 days in a year where you would have that good demand that you could do such a price change and you missed it, that would basically amount to 100,000 euros. So if you have a chain of 20 hotels, that would be 2 million. And if you're Marriott with 5,700 hotels, that means 570 million euro extra a year. So then, let's say a return on investment for an RMS is very clear. And this is exactly that thing what a revenue manager cannot keep up with in terms of systems. So all the statistical computation, all that data crunching, all that forecast updating, doing a proper overbooking based on real statistical data and displacement analysis. Those are all things like we should use systems for to help us. But then on the other hand, there are a lot of other things, a lot of strategical things, a lot of setup things where you still need the human manpower to get.
Well, I was going to touch on that, and we'll probably dig into it a little bit more. But here I am in my owner role or GM role of a small, I'm kind of hearing that I need a revenue management system. Where, before we get into the maybe some more detail of the revenue manager and how it's evolving, but where would the human element, what should I be looking at the human element interaction be? So whether I've got someone in property or whether I'm coming to a professional consultancy like yours, Pontus, what would you be looking to add through utilizing, you know, I've got a system in place, where are you adding to it rather than me just relying purely on the technology to do the job for me?
Yeah. So there is obviously, well, one thing to just start off is to say, what kind of hotel are you, and how much of your business are you selling via transient, your transient segment? So if you have a huge hotel and you have big groups, you have big contracts, corporate and wholesaler contracts, and maybe 20 to 30% sits at your at your transient official or public prices, then that's sort of a given. Like a system will optimize 30% of your business, but the other 70% needs to be optimized somewhere else. And there you use more descriptive tech maybe to sort of utilize that to enable you to make better decisions, but still there is a lot of decision making needed. And then I would also say that before you even implement the RMS system on a hotel that basically comes from nothing, that haven't done any revenue mm-hmm. management before, the setup process is a huge part of that. Basically, I meet clients that have never written a budget for their own hotel. They were like the beginners, I guess, and they never thought about capitalism and if they actually have a goal of making profit or not. Or they don't have any segmentation in place, they have never looked at market share, and all these things would need to be implemented from scratch. And that's quite a lengthy and huge process and gives a huge impact in itself. So that's for sure where you would need.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, some starting points. Jens, do you have anything else to add in terms of the human interaction? Because I have a question for you in a minute around the RMS systems, but just on that human interaction piece.
No, I think that's a great description by Pontus. I think we more or less all agree when it comes to common sense that what we do really well are qualitative workflows and decision-making processes, and we are not that great without support in quantitative ones. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you an example. If I'm selling a car, used car, new car, one conversation, I'm speaking to somebody for an hour, there's a lot that I'm learning through that process about their needs. We're negotiating essentially back and forth. They're learning things, I'm learning things. Prices are being thrown around. That's a very qualitative engagement. If I have an e-commerce business, if I'm running Amazon and I'm selling hundreds and thousands of things every day online and they're all relatively commoditized, I have to rely on the numbers. So it becomes quantitative. I can't rely on the signals or the face of the other person. So I think that's the kind of broad distinction. And the aspects of running a hotel, which are qualitative, are what's the type of brand that I am building? Mm-hmm. What are the types of guests that fit in with that brand? What are the reviews that I'm getting in telling me about where I'm situated in the market? All of those things are incredibly rich and qualitative. But when it comes to how do I build a forecast of where I'm going to end up this month or next month based on hundreds or thousands of different data points, that's a very different type of skill.
Yeah, and then you're into the quantitative piece that you mentioned. So just back to your point, Pontus, about, okay, so you walk into ITB and there's this whole raft of tech companies, we're talking RMS systems, I narrow in. So I guess a question for you, Jens, are all RMS systems made equal?
So I am maybe to a fault. I love analogies, and I'm not from the hospitality industry. But what I now almost consider myself part of the industry. I think I'm gradually earning the right to be considered a part of the industry after 2.5, 3 years. Here. But what's interesting to me now, still as a little bit of an outsider, is that RMSs have basically been bought on people. So, you know, the old thing, people buy people, not products. That's kind of how it's worked. You've kind of said, who is the salesperson selling this product? Do they tick all the boxes in my RFP, et cetera, et cetera? And then almost more importantly, what's the price of this thing that I'm buying? It's almost as though you're just ticking a box because somebody told you that you need this thing called an RMS and you need this thing called a channel manager in a PMS and you're just ticking boxes. And as a tech person, there's just so little evaluation there. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we really want to advocate for is more thought and work going into the buying process. So what are actually the differences between these different products? it's a little bit like we're buying cars.
Yeah.
Right. And we don't, nobody looks at the fuel economy. We just go, what does it look like? And what's the quality of the handshake of the guy that I'm dealing with? And what's the price of it? And that's it. But we don't open the hood and go, what, you know, and I shouldn't use this analogy because I don't know anything about cars, but, you know, V8 or V6, whatever cars have in them. What type of thing is it? How fast can it go? What's the fuel economy? That nobody really knows that. And even if you speak to people who are buying solutions that are hundreds of thousands a year in costs, very little work has actually gone into understanding, is this better than something else? What am I getting out of this? What's the comparison?
So I take from that now I'm walking around ITB, I should have a much better understanding of some of the features I should be looking for, what I need it to be able to achieve. So by implication, they're not all created equal. I mean, without using specific names for obvious reasons, what can be, again, just in a snapshot, if we can, so anyone listening and they happen to go to one of these events, they can at least on a scale be able to maybe understand broadly. People who say they have an RMS system, from say being a true 100% RMS system, if we go down the scale, what are others doing that are claiming to be RMS but maybe aren't? If that's not too unfair a question.
No, I think that's a good question. And, you know, I to be fair, I would call anybody who wants to be called an RMS an RMS, because they're all solutions of some sort.
Sure.
So I wouldn't reserve that to anybody in particular, but I think there are, broadly speaking, three different categories of technology that you're buying. So the first one is people masqueraded as technology. So effectively, what you have are a group of people outsourced who are doing the same old work in Excel, but it's more or less presented to you through an interface or through Excel. So it's basically no different from the old spreadsheets, where there are formulas in there and there's the assumptions of somebody who came before you, who put his or her assumptions into a spreadsheet, and you're now running off those.
Okay.
Does that make sense? So it's basically basically people still making the decisions, but it looks like technology.
Mm-hmm.
And really what you're buying are the people and their opinions. And then secondly, you have another approach, which is looking at what the market's doing. And that's a broad category. And there are lots of companies in there, and many of them will still also claim to be doing, and by the way, all of these three groups claim to be doing technology, and increasingly in the last 5 years, they all claim to be doing artificial intelligence, which I think everybody in technology claims to be doing across all sectors. So that's something unusual for hospitality. Everybody's doing AI. But really what's underpinning the second category is looking at the market. So what you're doing is effectively behind the scenes determining a comp set for you, and working out whether that comp set is moving up or down in prices, and then more or less having you follow that comp set. And then the third category is actual analytical pricing, which are genuine statistical models, which is what I would kind of put more into the kind of genuine machine learning or artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
So those are kind of roughly how we see it. And we claim and think that we're part of the third category, which is doing the genuine analytical work of statistical methods. And we have some really strong people in our team who have been focused on that for a long time. And I think there are a few ways to work out. There are a few smart ways to work out. Who am I talking to? What are they actually doing? One of them is just look at the size of the team. If you have a team of people that are selling you a product, and there's five people in the team, all of them have come from the hotel industry, and they claim to be doing, to have built a statistical engine, then you have to look at what sort of background do they have in that field. And if you look at the solution that where every single price that you get recommended pretty much follows the market, then again, you have to ask yourself the same question. So there are a few there are a few good ways, and there are more, but there are a few good ways of understanding what you're actually dealing with. And I think that's something I would very much recommend anybody who is buying an RMS to do, to kind of look at what are the team, what is the actual approach behind this, and what results will that give me.
That makes sense. And Pontus, from your perspective, I mean, you deal with a wide range of clients, so you probably come across still the Excel spreadsheet and then a combination of others. Anything to add into what Jens has said there?
Well, I definitely agree with those three type of systems that Jens is describing. And I think it's a combination in the third category. I think it's a combination of both. Like, if you want to create a really proper RMS system that really deals with proper statistical models, you need the brainiacs from MIT, from all these things that have studied a lot of mathematics on the highest levels, etc. But you also need to guide a programmer and mathematicians to say what problems do you need to solve. Because I see that actually in some other systems, in some cases throughout the years, where the thought is sort of, when the thought is a bit wrong from the beginning, you can program anything you like and the outcome will be shit. There's a combination of both. And I would just add, and I think for me, it's sort of 2 to 3 systems on the market that I would even classify in Jens category 3.
Right.
A lot of people sit in category 2. And it's like Jens saying, so if you go back to the textbook, like I myself studied a lot of mathematics in Swedish high school, but then I chose a different path. So I guess that helps me with understanding these things a bit. But I looking at then coming to revenue management studies and the theory about that and the mathematics around that, there's one thing called the price elasticity ratio that is sort of the key of understanding what happens to your pickup and to your demand when you change your price with X. And that, when I was actually entering in the industry later in revenue management, I tried to use this old textbook I had and really in a manual way calculate the price elasticity ratio for any hotel group back then. And it is so difficult because you have so many variables in the real life hotel. And when you have all these corporate contracts and they are LRA and non-LRA and et cetera. So in the end of the day, you look at a lot of like brand awareness, also how strong the brand is of the hotel you're doing, a lot of things. And that's where you need this MIT brainiacs to figure this out. But if you have that, you sort of make it. And I think that's what you guys, Jens, are doing. And I think that's really cool because looking at the other things, how can I simplify this? If you look at this price elasticity, so what happens if I put my price up with X? That is influenced by a lot of different demand factors. So what you can talk about weather on the coast, you can talk about snow depths in the Alps, you can talk about your competitor prices, but it all sort of boils down to this elasticity. And
maybe we should help the listeners by just defining what that is a little bit. So I guess that I'll start with what it's not.
Yeah.
Because I think this is something that I see when poor revenue managers tell me their targets, and their target is to increase ADR from 70 to 80 and to get occupancy up from 85 to 90.
Mm-hmm.
So they're being tasked with doing two different things, which is incredibly hard because they're actually contradictory. So the price elasticity, which you're mentioning, is if I'm at 100 euros, if I increase the price by 10%, will I have 10% fewer bookings? And if I decrease the price by 10%, will I have 10% higher bookings? Because if your ADR goes up by 10% and your occupancy goes down by 10%, your RevPAR is in the same place.
Yeah.
And what you really want to find is this magical thing where, and this is basically price sensitivity, where where customers are not very price sensitive, which means that you can increase your price and they will keep buying. So you increase your price by 10%, but you only have 1% fewer bookings.
Exactly. And that would be different, obviously, by different consumer groups and different willingness to buy and purchasing power, etc. But really, like, my point is that in this category two, when you look at systems that say, I look at these and these and these different factors, so either you sort of, you're good and you look at all factors and you have exactly the same, the correct weight of looking at these factors, or you simply take a step back and you more analyze your internal pick up and pasting with this elasticity. And then you sort of, you have included all these different factors in a way. So the ones that look at only outside factors, and they probably, they have a very difficult task, because if they don't look at them correctly and all of them right, then the outcome will be a little bit faulty. And number one, like you said, the category, that's basically the descriptive take. So that's people that you basically see statistics and they say, here's an RMS systems, but it's more descriptive BI tool, actually.
So then, listening to that and going back to one of our original comments of the combination of strategy, technology, and people. So the strategy is key because that leads you to ask the questions, make the decisions, develop the systems or buy the systems that you want. Mm-hmm. Do you, looking then at the human interaction, is the human interaction more or less depending on whether your system is one, two, or three?
I'll throw in a quick answer if I may, which is kind of the maybe flippant answer, but I think it really depends on how you view the system. So if we look at the first, which is basically people masqueraded as tech, the first category. Basically manual kind of rules. That can be as simple as for every 1% increase in occupancy, increase my price by X percent. So I move from 10 to 20% in occupancy, increase my price a little bit. And market can just be following the market. And analytical is obviously analytical. But depending on how much you trust them, they can all be automated. You can do absolutely no manual work and have all of these systems can just sit there and be automated. Or you can have the systems there in place and you're buying, you're paying for them, but you don't trust any of them. So you can have somebody, and I'll now mention a name, you can have somebody who has spent a ton of money on ideas and all the most expensive systems, and they're overriding everything because they think they know best. Yeah. So I think you have the full spectrum of trust throughout all of those three groups.
Makes sense. Pontus?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, maybe in general, I would say the more sophisticated and more in the category three you have, the less time you definitely need to spend on pricing as a revenue manager. So in that sense, it should be a time saver. But a lot of the systems, I would say, still today, and I think that's something that will change in the future, does require quite a lot of input and a framework to be put in order for the system to function well. Let's say if you take a hotel that has never done revenue management and you have a system that basically starts making decisions based on past data, but that status quo in itself is wrong because they underperformed and they were maybe reaching 20% lower RevPARs than they should have had looking at their competition, then you need to sort of change the data of the past in order for the future to be correct. So I think I think will change, and then there's also a big difference, I believe, from system to system regarding those things. But that is for sure where you need to put some time in, and a revenue manager needs to look over these sort of overall strategic things for it.
So I think listening to what both of you have said, this is what's probably what we're seeing is driving this evolution of the revenue manager. As you say, if we trusted the system and it just overwrites everything or it just tells you what to do, do you need the old traditional revenue manager there that was adjusting the pricing? You don't, because it's being done if you trust it. So if we're already hearing the values of what the system can bring, we know that there are different types of systems that provides us different value to our property. Where is the revenue management role going? Where is the revenue manager role evolving? And how are these two working in conjunction to be adding greater value, not only to the property, but then also to the individual? Because as a revenue manager, if I'm fearing I'm going to be replaced because of technology, how is that role evolving? What should they be focusing on? What should they be doing? How, if I'm running a property, should I be looking at investing not only in technology, but also in somebody who can help me commercially to actually utilize this quantitative piece, but bring me that qualitative element that's going to be adding value?
Jens, what do you think, like, in terms of what the system, let's say, the strength of the RMS in the future as well, and what won't an RMS be able to do in that sense?
It's the old should I be worried about my dog kind of article. I think it's a great question. We should all ask ourselves, should I be worried about my job? I think there's one good reason we should all ask ourselves that, because it helps us also work out what we're doing on a regular basis, which is routine and manual, maybe even tedious, that we're doing it and maybe wouldn't need to be doing. But I think the question, should I be worried about my job, is more, which part of my job should I be worried about? I think that's really the question, because we do so.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Today.
Yeah.
I'm probably not going to lose having lunch with your colleagues. It's probably not going to be disrupted anytime soon. So start there. What other parts won't be disrupted? I think the gauge for finding out whether your task is at risk is how quickly can somebody else learn what you're doing. So if you're moving crates of beer from one place to another, that's relatively simple to learn. Excel spreadsheeting is relatively simple to learn. Having a great relationship with a difficult GM. Who has amazing strengths in some areas, but needs to be pampered in one area and needs to be kind of communicated with in a certain way. That's something that's really hard to learn. And that, I think, it brings us back to the qualitative versus quantitative. And then we have to all have a deep think about what are the things that we are doing which are more of one and more of the other. So as revenue managers, what are the things that we're doing and where do they sit? We have so many different roles. Where one thing that I think is undervalued hugely in what revenue managers do is the communication between different departments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's something that we just take it for granted, but we have a marketing team out there spending valuable money on marketing. Should they be focusing on a Christmas campaign or an Easter campaign? You know, how are we doing for occupancy? And then we have a sales team who are negotiating completely wildly in the other room, and we're not necessarily talking to them. We have cities where we have contracts out, even though transient demand is more than enough to fill our rooms. Who is responsible for negotiating those contracts? And the list goes on and on. And I think we really have to map out what are the different areas in this business, this hotel, that we consider to fall within revenue management, and which are the ones that maybe we're not doing anything about today that we should be doing something about, and which are the other ones that are actually routine more than anything we can perhaps automate to get some tools.
Jens, you mentioned the one we talked once about this, remember, about the group statistics and fair, because we talked about it, that the statistical data points are so few, so that it's very difficult to sort of compute it automatically what to do there. What do you think about, like, Or could you maybe explain that to the listeners, and what do you think about the future of that area?
Yeah, that's happy you brought that up, because that kind of brings us back to the old thing of how many data points you have. If you're negotiating with a customer over the phone, they are very reliable. Every year they have brought you demand. Maybe it's a school if you're a hostel. Maybe it's a corporate deal if you're a hotel.
Yeah.
You know something. You know a lot about that relationship and whether or not that will materialize. There's such a richness of information there, but those are not data points. They're things that we just know about the relationship. So that's something where you could never have an RMS which will do a good job of predicting what will the outcome be for example, groups or contracts. It's just super hard. One, because you don't have enough data points there, you don't have enough history, but also because you're missing all of the stuff that's involved in the relationship. So what we focus on, and we did this very consciously, is to focus on yielding, which is the most quantitative process out there. Yielding and forecasting. Those are super numerical. And we also focused on a segment where we have lots of data points, which is transient. At least the majority of hotels. So if you're selling 80% of your property on OTAs, you don't know much about those customers. You just get the reservations through from booking.com or Expedia. And there's a lot of them coming in. So there's no richness of information. There's no negotiation. There's no, you know, face-to-face relationship. So there's nothing we're missing, and we're getting a ton of data. And we did an amazing job of that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're filling your property 6 months ahead of time through individual deals, which are negotiated over coffee and rum, that's not something that we're going to do a great job of. And of course, then there's the whole thing in the middle. Which is where you and I at Qantas meet, and we collaborate, and we kind of say, well, these are all the areas which are strategic, and these are the areas which are where you really need the help of an analytical tool.
Qantas, so just a question for you then, because you've been in the traditional revenue management role, you're seeing it evolving, you're adding value to your customers above and beyond. How do you see the role? Where do you see the value being of revenue managers in the future? What should they be focusing in on now?
I think it's definitely going, like, I would, first of all, we can just say we could change the title of a revenue manager to a commercial director, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
The person needs to be on eye-to-eye level with the GM of the hotel. Whereas the GM then should focus more on the guest and the front of the house and all of that, and the commercial director takes care of all the commercial back office, basically. But like Jens said, it's this communication between departments, and you're really the spider in the net, saying, you know, you're actioning your departments to put in the efforts where it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So do I need a summer or a fall or a winter promo, or Do I need to launch a last minute promotion to fill up some need dates, and what distribution tactics should I apply to reach my target group? So all these kind of things, and like Jan said, maybe your sales colleagues. This happens a lot, yeah. So your sales colleagues come back from the IMEX fair in Frankfurt, and they're like, "Hey, we have a lot of new business." And it's all requests for basically the two big A fairs next year. And you're like, I don't need any business there. And then there's no understanding why and so on. So it's really important that you sort of actionalize your commercial team properly, that sales efforts are going in the right direction and are action towards the right markets and the right target groups, that your marketing efforts and budgets are spent accordingly, etc. So all of that sort of communication strategical role, I would say, is the key. The setup of hotels, so what segmentation do I need? How do I set up my distribution? How do you change your distribution landscape along the time as time goes on and OTA change and everything? And I would say, basically, I've already vouched a long time for that. No hotel needs 40 hours for one revenue manager. Actually, not even back in the day, because a non-property revenue manager, and still today, if the ones that are, they actually spend their time on a lot of other things than revenue management related things. They maybe head up the reservations department, or they sometimes even help maybe in the breakfast service if needed, if there's a crisis one day. But so if you do focus on pure, strategical and statistical thinking and using RMS systems, one revenue manager today can for sure handle more hotels than what they could 10 years ago. So if you look at all the big chains with proper systems in place, each revenue manager handled between 3 to 6 mm-hmm. hotels, depending on market and need. So, and that's the same way we work. So I think that a centralized revenue management role is definitely something sensible. And if you do want your RM on property, that person is probably best to be incorporated in other functions of the hotels to help out and maybe do a bit of sales and do a bit of other of the commercial things hands-on. That's, in my mind, the only thing that makes sense.
So much more multifaceted. And again, we're getting back to the same thing that we've been discussing, where it's the breaking down the silos. So rather than having marketing and sales and revenue that was always separate, now as these things are blended together, back to your point about a commercial manager or commercial director, where they are involved in either directly or indirectly guiding based on the decisions that they're working through. And that makes sense. One of the things that we all talk about what we're very good at. So very briefly, I'm conscious we've been talking for 50 minutes here. So we're conscious of listeners listening for a long time. But we always talk about what we're good at. Jens, if I can direct this to you to start with. So as a tech company, RMS, what actually can you not do?
Yeah, great question. There's so many things that we can't do, and they all have to do, again, I'm banging on about the same thing, but it's about the richness of what goes on the other side. And that's really where we work so closely with the customers that we have on what are the strategic parameters within which we should operate. What is the brand? What's the brand promise? What's the positioning in the market? Mm-hmm. To put it in really kind of simple, concrete terms, at what price do you start to generate expectations that will turn into bad reviews or negative, disappointing experiences? Below what level of price do you start to have a different type of segment of people be your guest that perhaps will conflict with other forms of guests? What seasonal patterns do you have? Where do you know that something will happen in the property? What are your aspirations? What are the things that you want to drive? Do you have an F&B strategy? How does that play into your overall ambitions? There's so many of these conversations that we need to have in a very detailed way. And we don't spend a lot of time doing it, but it's important to kind of be clear about where we should target the system, so that it operates well. But all of the things that I've mentioned here, and I could go on and on, are things that we don't do well.
That makes sense. So I guess Pontus, flipping it over, that's probably you're the other side of that conversation then, from the strategic part. So what I can see the obvious answer coming here, but what can you not do?
Yeah. No, it is like we said, a human with today's technology will never be able to process the same computing power and make the same statistical accurate calculations that an RMS can do. So the time when doing accurate forecasting, pricing of your trends and segments, those are definitely coming to an end in that sense of system will be able to do that better, and in many cases they already are. So that is for sure the strength of the RMS systems. Yeah. The data crunching.
Very, very quickly then, we've spoken a lot about the tech, the human side, what people should be doing. You don't necessarily have to name names, but you're welcome to if you want to. Where are some good examples? Can you give some examples of groups or hotels that in your opinion are doing a good job of tackling this at the moment?
I'm happy to jump in with an example. I'll stay clear of names, but there's one group that we have been working with in the region of 15 to 20 properties, European. Multinational, so plenty of different locations in different countries. And this group was acquired, so changed ownership a few years ago. With that change of ownership came new management, fresh thinking. And there were many changes that happened in that transition phase. But I think what happened was just a textbook example of the great things that can come of starting with the strategy. And first, essentially, you first build your strategy. What are we trying to achieve? Over what time frame? And then you start to think about, and this, by the way, is great advice for any business. Start with a goal, then build the strategy, and then work out the roles that you need. So the configuration of the team that you need. And then start thinking about what people do I have, maybe already have, that fit into those roles. And that actually kind of helps you because you may have an existing team, but you need to decouple that from your thinking. So you need to think first, what are the roles? And then you can think about how the people fit into those roles. And maybe some people don't fit into any of the roles, and that's okay. And maybe you need to have some people come in from the outside. And then you think about, what do I need to support those people in those roles for that strategy? All of that happened in this particular company, and they ended up changing some of the people in the revenue management team, not reducing it in size actually, because there were a lot of things they needed to go through. They ripped up many of the contracts, so many of the contracted distribution and demand that they had. Took some short-term pain, but they knew that they needed to do that in order to get more valuable business. And over a period of 6 months, 6 to 12 months, their EBIT, so the underlying profits of that group, grew by 50%. So tremendous growth from just having a look at all of those things that I mentioned and really looking at where am I distributing, at what prices. They also did. They also put some capital into the properties, renovated them, etc. But 50% is just phenomenal growth from a group that was already perceived to be relatively well managed.
Very good, Pontus. Is there any examples you can kind of share on a broad level?
Yeah, I can share. I can mention the first client that we ever took on board. Central Hotel Kaiserhof in Hannover. They have 78 rooms. Situated in the city center of Hannover. When we came there, they basically had nothing. Yeah? They never wrote a budget. They didn't have segmentation in place. Barely any channel manager, basically. After 2 years working with them, we did all that sort of base setup, as I'd like to call it. Yeah? But it's things that also take time. It's like Jens said in his example, it's kicking out old contracts, taking out groups for fairs, taking out corporate contracts that are not necessary, taking out wholesaler FAT contracts that are not necessary, that disturb rate parity. It's about freeing up the inventory and taking control of the inventory of the hotel. And that, together with distribution tactics and a fairly manual pricing approach, we managed to increase that hotel's revenue by 25% in 2 years. And market shares as well is a good sort of identification factor of where can it go. And now is the perfect time to implement an RMS on top of that, because now we need to take it to the next level and the next step. And probably could have done that even before, but it's just a way of showing, like, you can I'm not going to mention the exact room revenue that this hotel does, but let's just say it does 2 million, then 25% growth is a growth of 500,000 euro. And that's then with the whole sort of base approach. And then you can optimize and get another 100, 200,000 on top with the proper now pricing system. So I think that just shines the light of that both are needed, and there's also a limit to where what you know you can deliver without this technology, and then now you will want to have it. And for other clients, my experience says that if you have a potential of a hotel of let's say 100% increase coming from revenue management activities, depending on like how big you are, what your segmentation mix are, but anything from 50-50 from what the system delivers and the sort of the other strategical part of revenue management up to 70-30 more or less. But you need definitely the system to do the last part.
Really convenient point, because we hadn't actually planned this prior to the podcast, but your number was 25% revenue growth without still having manual pricing, and mine was 50% growth with strategic, making all the other work, plus then working with Pace as well. So it seems to fit the 50-50 paradigm.
Yeah.
Well, I think there were great examples, and I think what it does, just listening to both of you and asking you the questions, what can't you do, I think demonstrated perfectly how the technology and the people element can work together. But I think what has come out very clearly through all of this is the importance of strategy. Yeah. Because without the strategy, you don't ask the questions either around your people or around what the system needs to do. Obviously, it sets a direction. We know the value of setting the strategy. But I think that's often, certainly in conversations that I overhear, it sometimes is often the conversations are too tactical, and what are the opportunities or threats at a tactical level, rather than actually looking strategically and thinking, where do I want to be? What am I aiming for? And then that derives the questions that you've touched on and helps you then to formulate some decisions that you then can base around technology. And then that can help you to go and explore when you turn up at your ITB, looking at that decision-making process, about, okay, am I after, do I want to be in camp one, camp two, or camp three with the technology that is available out there? Listening to what's going on, I have a view. I would probably be leading back to camp three, and having a commercial director and forming those two things together around a very strong strategy. But that's, I guess, for other people to decide. That's been a really useful conversation. We've done an hour. I think that's probably taken enough of your time, which we really appreciate. It's very generous of you. So Jens, thank you very much. Pontus, thank you guys. It's been hugely valuable.
Cheers.
So, mind if I threw in a concluding remark? Because your words there are inspirational. I do think I want to reiterate what I heard at High Tech Minneapolis last week, up on stage, where people were talking about revenue strategy and having exactly this type of strategic deep dive in what you're doing and who your people are and what tools you have. What we're talking about here are numbers of 10 to 20% or more of your revenue that's being lost every year that you're just not seeing, and in many cases more. So I would really urge anybody who is listening to this and who is in hospitality to take a step back and a deep breath and ask yourself the question, if there is 20% of your revenue being lost every year, how can that not be worth a day out with your management team to work out what can be done about this and whether you have the right capabilities in place?
Good summaries.
Yeah, good advice.
So that's the end of today's podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. If you had any questions or future topic suggestions, please feel free to reach out via content at revenue-hub.com. Thank you all for listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe, like, and tell your colleagues and friends. Catch you next time.